It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We are continuing a five-part series with the individual Tuolumne County supervisors as a chance to hear about what is happening specifically in their district and their take on issues facing the county as a whole. Today, we're joined in studio by Jaron Brandon, who represents District 5. Supervisor Brandon, welcome back in.
BJ, thank you.
So anyone who's unfamiliar, remind us, District 5, where does it all cover?
So that's largely Columbia and Jamestown and west of the city limits of Sonora.
So what are some projects specific to District 5 going on right now?
Oh, there's so much happening. Well, in particular, I'm really excited about the Narcotics Task Force. You might hear the term TNT thrown around. We've gotten that reestablished after several years of compensation, basically, you know, fixes to our deputy sheriffs, addressing staffing. And they've been doing a lot of busts on drug house serving warrants. This is not just a District 5, it's a countywide issue, but this is particularly an issue in some of the communities that I represent. And so I'm really happy we have that tool. In addition to that, we've got a lot of transportation stuff in Jamestown. People might be noticing some work on the streets there. We're getting towards the sidewalk and Main Street kind of improvement plan with the Clean California grant, which has been really good there. And then looking at a number of economic development projects. I'm really excited about the prospect of south of Jamestown becoming a major industrial or commercial center for the county, you know, creating more jobs, seeing more housing built in the area, and really, you know, adding to our overall economy. So there's a lot happening, and I think we're a little bit in a period of waiting with a couple new supervisors that are going to be joining the board too and rebuilding back that team. So.
And then the streets project, remind us what's happening downtown.
Yeah, so this is through the Clean California grant with Caltrans. This was something that the county applied for to fix some of the atrocious sidewalks that we had been dealing with in Jamestown, some of the lips there. And it's going to be fixing up about half the sidewalks, replanting the trees that were done incorrectly the first time. So they keep tearing them up. We're going to do it right this next time. And putting up a mural, doing some aesthetic improvements as well. And so my hope is that we're going to see within the next, you know, 3 to 6 months, reskinning new surface of Jamestown. It's going to look really good. Combined with, I think, the resort opening is going to be a very attractive place to want to invest and start a business and walk around.
When you say some economic development areas, are there specific spots you're looking at?
Yeah, particularly Keystone. So we've got, as a rural county, you kind of look at your assets. We have rail, and a lot of mountain rural areas don't have rail. We also have two major highways that run through there. We have land that is buildable. There's some challenges to make sure we have utility capacity, and that kind of gets in the weeds of, like, why hasn't it happened yet? You know, we got to streamline codes. We have to make it a lot easier. I think there's a lot that the county can be doing on that, and I'm excited to keep pushing on that area. But once we can pipe it and we can plan it, I think we're a great area to invest. And I think we have all the advantages in some of those spots of the valley and then some. We've seen, you know, a lot of areas of the valley blow up. Of course, we want it to be something that feels like Tuolumne County. And I think that has to be acknowledged. But we want manufacturing jobs to come back. We want more than, I think, just a tourism-based economy. You know, we want to see office space, commercial space. We want to see apartments and places that people can afford here. So all of that's possible, and I think Jamestown is the best place to put it. But we got to work on some of those underlying things.
Yeah, I know you've talked in the past about the desire to see more housing in the Jamestown area. Mm-hmm. What are some of the hurdles right now to getting to that point?
The biggest thing is utility capacity. As mentioned, you can't build it if you can't pipe it. So any significant development requires water and sewer. And that's not just the hookup at the place and the pipe running it, kind of the middle mile of pipe, but also the plant capacity. And Jamestown is served by a sanitary district that got a new plant, but it didn't have more capacity. It was a water quality grant. And so we're having to work through that. And we've partnered with them on a grant called REAP 2.0. We've given them several million dollars to do an improvement on their existing system to identify any waste. That's going to be a good start. We're trying to figure out tertiary treatment related to quartz reservoir and sharing that with TUD. But eventually, we're going to need a capacity expansion. And so how we pay for that when no development is generally large enough to cover the cost of their own utility plant. So we have to figure out some way to piecemeal it up that several developments planned together or they're paying into a fund is able to justify that, and we're not putting it as much as possible on the backs of ratepayers. A lot of people don't know, but utility districts are not under county control. You know, they've got their own boards, their own electeds, and everything there too. And so when the moratorium was issued there, we can do all the land use planning authority we want, but we have to be able to pipe those projects. So partnership is the solution there. But it's really hard. This is what happens when we stop planning for growth and infrastructure for 20 to 40 years. Our roads fall apart. Our pipes are, you know, clay and rust and whatnot in the ground. They're falling apart. We end up with an electrical grid that falls apart. So we really have to put a focus on not just coasting on 1980s infrastructure anymore. 1980s is generous, actually. A lot of this stuff goes back 50, 60, 70 years into the past and hasn't been repaired. So that's the biggest hurdle by far.
How about homelessness, especially around the Jamestown area? There were some issues around Rawhide Bridge for a while. What's kind of the status with that location and just homelessness in your district in general?
Yeah, homelessness is a hugely complicated challenge. What I'm really proud of is when I started, there were homeless encampments all around the periphery of Jamestown, from the Rawhide Bridge area to the Oak Hills Apartments to Wigwam Road to a number of other little spots. And this is the first time in our, you know, town history for the recent memory that we don't have any camps, at least none new that I'm aware of. And we've worked one by one to close all of those. We've got the Clean and Clear ordinance, which is giving us the tools. We did that in advance of what the state moved with the court decision overturning Martin v. Boise. You might hear that if you've followed any of the board meetings or Facebooks there. But to basically say we have to keep public safety. And we can't simply accept that folks live in camps where there are, you know, drugs and lots of trash and all of that and expect them to recover in that environment. On the other side, we've got a number of projects, all state funded, all grant funded, almost no local dollars go into anything related to homelessness. We've leveraged that money to get a housing pathway so that people who actually want to get better, they've got behavioral health clinicians to work with, they can work through addiction, they can work through mental health, but they've got a roof over their head, they've got a door. And those facilities are, when we purchased, we expected about 18 to 24 months to renovate, get everything fixed up. You know, we don't want to buy it and then in 5 years find out the plumbing's bad when the money's gone. And so we are approaching some of the first ones of those, like the transitional shelter in Rafferty Court, Soulsbyville opening up. And then the other ones hopefully following within the next 6 to 12 months. So we're trying to be, I think, a lot tougher than we have in the past on addressing the safety side. We're also operating or offering a kind of recovery side to help people. And then point by point working on, you know, closing these encampments that in particular, yeah, Jamestown has been hugely negatively impacted. And we're going to have to work for quite a while, I think, to restore that reputation that, you know, it is now it's a safe place to walk and shop and go do business and work. But people remember the years that wasn't as true, and you'd see those things. So it's going to be an ongoing process.
So that's kind of a quick snapshot of everything going on around Jamestown and some of the bigger issues. How about Columbia? Are there any specific projects around Columbia?
Well, Columbia continues to innovate in their events. We got some really fun stuff for Halloween. So anybody out looking for Halloween events, and I was just bugging BJ about that and trying to get him to spend some money in Columbia, come out, all of these things, it's all put on by the businesses. It's a hugely great time. And so that's the major, you know, update we have for that area is upcoming events. Big thing, I think, of interest to any aviators in the audience is we're going to be putting out a new master plan. I think it's a master feasibility study for the airports. And this is our capital outlay. This is looking at making sure we maintain FAA compliance. But it's also an opportunity to say, you know, what things do we not have here? Wouldn't it be great to have a rental car service? How do we get more tourists to come back so that they're flying up and spending some money in town? I think it's going to be a really cool opportunity. The biggest issue that we're facing right now has been lodging. Columbia and Jamestown are both highly tourism dependent day trip areas. We do not have enough hotels that are open, and we do not have many large hotels within District 5. It actually has the least amount of lodging of any district in the county when you count short-term rentals. And so that continues to be a big challenge, and we're very interested in, one, getting the concessions open, seeing if anybody wants to start a campground in the area too. Again, we get a lot of that type of audience that want to come, you know, hike up here, spend a couple days at a campsite. Or if you want to build a Holiday Inn or a Sheraton, please reach out. That is one of the key, I think, economic focuses for both the Columbia and Jamestown area. We need more lodging. We need them to stay longer. We want them to spend a little more money and have a great experience up here.
Need to take a break. We're talking with Supervisor Jaron Brandon on this weekend's Motherlode Views. It is part of our five-part series talking with the individual Tuolumne County Supervisors. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. We'll be back in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
Welcome back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We're focusing our five-part series on the individual Tuolumne County Supervisors. It's something we do every fall season. Today we're joined by District 5 Supervisor Jaron Brandon. He represents the greater Jamestown and Columbia areas. Supervisor Brandon, we ended the first segment talking a little bit about some projects around the Columbia area. I'm curious, there has been some talk, too, about a community resilience center in Columbia. What's kind of the status with that? And I know the county was looking at some grants at one point.
A huge priority. We lack community and I think service. I mean, who remembers the farmery? That was such a fantastic operation. But when you got to set up tents over your booths when you're inside a building because the roof is leaking and stuff's falling down, that's a bad sign. I really want that to be restored as a community space. You mentioned we applied for a couple of grants to try and create a resiliency center on the west side of the county. This would be like Groveland and Tuolumne. It's a high fire risk area. It makes a lot of sense. Unfortunately, we were not successful in getting those two grants. So we're looking at a third one now. I know that the airports also have some ideas, but shoot us an idea. Anybody wants to go turn that to a community center? You want to run a burger place out of that? We want to make a campground equipment rental. I mean, we're open to conversations about it. It does nobody any good to have a dilapidated building, you know, sitting around. Right now, our airports folks are doing a good job trying to maintain it. But it's going to need to be reutilized into something. In this kind of modern era, having a building that's built where you can do a three-wall renovation opens up a lot of potential for ideas. And being next to the airport and the state park on a major kind of, you know, corridor there, I think there's a lot that we could do. We just got to find the right one that's going to have the money to fix the whole thing up. Eventually, I'd love to see it be, at the end, we say resiliency center. What does that mean? Why would this be different? A great hall that could end up being a indoor farmer's market, that could have shops, that could have educational sessions for the elementary school and Columbia College, that around the periphery could have offices. So you got an ATCO or social services office rather than having to drive into town, a food pantry, you know, things that will benefit people's lives, and a space that we can use when somebody's got a great idea to really make it happen. So,
how about power outages? Because for a while there, it seems like I was in every day on newscast. Columbia, new day, another power outage. Have you heard much from PG&E about
some of the issues? Are you guys on a generator here? You got to be on a generator.
We have a couple generators, a few, yes.
A few backups. I do not. I'm on candle power, a candle and lantern power at my house. So my grid, the one I'm on in Columbia, Columbia and Phoenix Lake and Groveland are the three that are the worst. And the outages have been extremely bad. They were really bad last year. And we talked about that, 30 outages in the 60-day period. Credit where credit is due. We have been working very closely since the outages of July last year. And our new government relations rep with PG&E, Nathan, has been working with us super well, really trying to help us find solutions. I know that You know, the Columbia one, for example, they had a no-fault outage. They had to go rebuild a lot of that system. They have given us data on the pole fuel reduction that they're doing across the county on, you know, a couple thousand poles. They're showing the, you know, different sensors that they're putting in, the deferred maintenance. And most excitingly, fingers crossed we get it, BJ, is $100 million Department of Energy grant called the GRIP program, Grid Resilience Improvement Program. And the basic pitch is this: you want us to do electric cars, fine. You want us to have energy efficient homes, relying on batteries, all that, sure. But how can you do that when you haven't invested in the grid, particularly on federal lands in a county like ours? It's 77% federal. When you haven't invested in the basic infrastructure to support it, infrastructure that's causing fire risk and cost California some $30 billion to have to do fire suppression, that's burning natural, you know, national federal resources. And they said, you know, right, we partnered with them, submitted an application. So if we get that $100 million into the grid, I think we've got a very strong competitive application based on our community, geography, and risk. That could be a game changer for Tuolumne County. And this is some of the stuff that we've missed by not being in the power discussions. Energy is so critical to people's household budgets. It's critical in terms of economic and jobs development within the state. It's also critical that you can't run a grocery store if your power goes off. You got to throw away all your meat after 4 hours. You can't, you know, get people to move to the county if they have to all install, you know, $15,000 generator is kind of a basic, you know, front there, or the power is going to go out all the time. And energy, even though it's not directly under our control, is something the county has not worked on explicitly in the past. We've kind of had a part-time position around. So we're making big strides, and I think trying to have with the Public Power Agency a rep that can track this stuff, identify opportunities. There's hundreds of billions of dollars being invested in this area, and we need to be positioned to see how that money can benefit people here. We can't afford to be asleep at the wheel as rural areas, because we will get passed over, and we will miss out on this as we did with highways and broadband and even initial electrification in the first place.
Yeah, can you elaborate a little bit on that? You mentioned that some things that have been missed by not being in the power discussions. What's happened in the past and what's changed now?
Oh, sure. I mean, when you know, money ebbs and flows at the state and federal level, as you know, depending on who's in office, what priorities they have, what the economic situation's like. But when the money's there, money goes to generally urban areas. They got the political support and these extensive apparatuses and the whole wall full of, you know, projects and binders ready to go. So we have to fight for that stuff. But what are we talking about? You know, energy conservation grants that can go replace people's outdated appliances or go replace their windows and help lower their bills. Talking about utility solar or energy generation and storage, which create, you know, high-end jobs, create property tax, contract, you know, revenue, create apprenticeship programs, diversifying, you know, the economy. Talking about solar, other renewables, or even batteries or anything like that on buildings. You know, fire stations having alternative sources of backup energy. You know, not all of our even public safety facilities in the county, when the power's out, they don't all have backup power generation. And so when these opportunities come up to invest in the grid, invest in distributed energy systems, invest in, you know, utility energy systems, there's almost always opportunities to find. But the thing is you got to understand how power's done, how CAISO does it, you know, where the money's at, what requirements they need. You know, you need to know about WAPA and PG&E and all kinds of fun acronyms. And I'm not going to be that guy. I know enough to know how much I don't know. But I know that we need to have somebody that is paying attention to that. Otherwise, you know, you snooze, you lose. You miss out on these opportunities. It's some of the work that is not the mandated stuff the county has to do day to day to run everything, and yet is extremely important. You know, we might keep our head cool by burying it in the sand, you know, for any type of emergency that comes through. And yet then we can't see anything happening around us. And we're not an island. We're affected by these conditions. You know, change is the thing that always happens, right? That's the most reliable thing. You can't stop change. What you can choose to do is ignore it and have it change you, or you can adapt to it. And I want us to be adapting to being more resilient as a community. But that means we have to take opportunities as they come.
Going to take one more break. We're talking to Supervisor Jaron Brandon on this weekend's Motherlode Views. He represents District 5. Motherlode Views brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Going to get into issues like fire services and Measure Z as well when we come back after the break. We'll be back in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And we welcome you back to Motherload Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host, talking about issues facing District 5 with District 5 Supervisor Jaron Brandon. That district covers Jamestown and Columbia. Supervisor Brandon, Tuolumne County has been receiving the federal SAFER grant that's been boosting fire services for your district as well as the county as a whole. You know, what is kind of the current state of fire and the challenges on the horizon?
Well, and thank you for your coverage of that, too, and letting a lot of people know about the SAFER grant. You know, right now, Tuolumne County is better protected in terms of fire service than we have ever been in our history. Since the Rim Fire in 2013, we had not expanded the fire system to provide more coverage here. You know, our plan for a county fire system goes back to 1974, and the only station that was added was Jamestown a long time back. And actually, Jamestown used the same thing. It was a SAFER grant that established a hybrid district with the local one when they could no longer provide the same level of service. And then that moved into a full-time county station. But they cost money, and we have to be able to cover it. It's crazy to me that since the Rim Fire, we didn't get the wake-up call to say we need to expand this and pay for it. So where we're at now is, in addition to Mono Village and Jamestown, we've got three additional stations. As you mentioned, one's in Columbia as well. That would be Schedule A full-time all-risk type stations, and many of them serve one, even 2,000 calls a year. Overall, I think it's about 6,500 in the county per year. These are heart attacks. These are house fires. These are disaster events. But each station costs about $2 million. So we've seen, Canyon Fire. We've seen Hauser Fire. We've seen the Peak Fire. When we talk about how many engines they have able to respond to that, to run a hose line and bulldoze and be able to get it under control, see a 70-acre fire and think, oh, it's just 70 acres. All of those fires that were catastrophic started there, and in 24 hours, they didn't have the resources they needed, and it blew up to something that was unmanageable. We are extremely good at responding to disaster here, thanks to our first responders, but they can't do it if their equipment is breaking down. So actually, since the Rim Fire, not only did we not expand, our equipment was an average of, I think, 24 years old, which is very old for fire stuff. Million-mile engines, water tenders rusting through. It was a really deficient system, and we cannot afford to have mistakes made for that. That SAFER grant ends next year, and that takes us into, asking voters, is this something in Columbia, in Soulsbyville, in Groveland, in these services that support protecting us in a countywide risk situation, to not end up being, the victims of a disaster like that again? Is it worthwhile to continue investing in public safety? And that's the question at hand.
And then so it kind of ties a little bit into Measure Z. Do you think Measure Z would be enough to put fire in a good spot moving forward, or would there have to be other revenue generators as well, or things that would have to be figured out?
Well, Measure Z, it's not a silver bullet. I say that over and over. What we need in terms of, full competitive staffing, fixing roads and fire, is substantially more. What this is an emergency funding for some of the most critical things. And I think a chance to see that we want to continue the investments of the past 3 years. So would it cover those three fire stations? I'm very confident that it would cover those operations. We're always going to have to figure out, when the state pushes something new on us that's a cost and doesn't give us money, how are we going to pay for that? We're always looking for efficiencies, but primarily sustaining deputy pay, where we've given them two historic raises, and now we've seen that work. We've got all the things we lost the previous 10 years before I joined office have been restored. The narcotics team, the inmate cleanup and graffiti abatement crews, the school resource officers are coming back. We're seeing patrol being able to do proactive policing when we had 17 out of 28 of those positions vacant before. Imagine we had one sergeant and three deputies on at any one time just 5 years ago for the entire county. So you put one up in Twainhart, one in Groveland, one in Jamestown, one in Sonora, and think, if you had to call because an intruder was in your house, how fast one of those would get to you. it's probably more than 15 minutes in a lot of that. So I do believe that it would cover sustaining those investments. We're going to have to figure out more additional things. Long term, we need economic development and housing. And I am clear-eyed on that 100%. That's why I'm going to keep fighting to bring job-creating projects here, streamline land use policies, solicit development. We have to be able to grow our tax base, our worker base, our business base. But we have to survive to the long term for long-term solutions. And every year we do not have adequate fire protection. Not only do people suffer from, say, the medical calls, but we put ourselves at risk of something getting out of hand. Every year we allow narcotics to invade our community, like fentanyl, and it kills all these people. We chase away business and investment and the safety that is so attractive to people here. Every year we don't invest in road infrastructure is another year that, again, people are going to choose to not want to come here. And so we have to fix those issues. At least patch it, at least put it on a positive trajectory so that we can get to those long-term solutions.
With Measure Z, the one-cent sales tax measure that will be on the November ballot next month, same question I asked the supervisor half during last week's show, but for people out there who say, I'm not going to vote for this because the county doesn't manage its money well, what's kind of your response to the people who say that?
We seem to have a lot of budget experts in the community. Here's what I'd say, our budget's online. I post about what I'm doing all the time. All of our meetings are recorded. Go point to it. If you are that confident there is corruption and waste, I'll tell you, I ran and I unseated an incumbent because I saw the same issues. And there were many issues. I wouldn't say it was mass amounts of waste, but there were issues we were ignoring. What we've had over 3 to 4 years is fixing those things and investing, but they don't go away overnight. You don't elect me because you like me, and then all of a sudden I can snap my fingers and make it go away. These are not easy problems. So if somebody is that confident to say and kind of offhandedly, well, it's all corruption, it's all waste, it's all whatever, help me point to it. I mean, very seriously, as a person who has spent 5 years full-time diving into this, as a representative of 12,000 people, as somebody who's at all of those meetings and more, who is trying to solve these problems, who's only in this job because this is something that I care about, that I'm passionate about, in trying to fix these issues, if I'm looking at that and I can't see what you're seeing, please point it out. There's a lot of folks that say, well, it's because of this, it's because of that. We're talking $6 million potentially for those three fire stations. At some level, there are things that we need to pay for and not pass on the risk and cost to future generations, because to me that is irresponsible. It's selfish. And that's what got us into this spot. People say, well, why is the roads issue $300 million. How did we let it get so bad? Because the same thing came up, I'm sure, 5 and 10 and 20 years ago, where somebody said, you know, maybe we shouldn't cut all the money into infrastructure and these public services everybody agrees and relies on. And other people said, yeah, but I don't want to pay for that right now. I have a higher priority. Let's figure it out in the future when it's a disaster or an emergency. And I don't think that's fair, and I don't think that's prudent, and it only gets more expensive. So if they want to vote against it, I understand that. I get why we don't want to have taxes. These stay 100% local. This is not the state. This is your local government that affects you. You have accountability. You could run for office if you don't like how it's being spent and have a reasonable chance at winning. You can show up to the meetings. You can give me a call. But if the answer is simply no, then we also have to live with the understanding that that means less public service. And so when things come up in an economic downturn that's cutting libraries and rec, when building fees go up, when we talk about not being able to have as many staff positions on patrol or closing a fire station, if you can't identify that waste, then you need to accept that it maybe is mostly going to really good things that we all care about and expect and like, and that to go without means to go without. And I think that's part of it. We have this expectation that these services work, that they work without us paying into it, and it's automatic. And it's not. This is all decades of collaboration and work and funding to make these things happen. And we've gotten a little bit comfortable with that, and a little bit privileged to say, well, I expect the government to go do all these things. And yet we're not willing to actually pay for it when we want an ambulance to respond, when we want a deputy to be there quickly, when I get frustrated about a pothole. We're not willing to really do the hard work, which is diving in and figure out the issue. And anybody wants to call me, 209-770-5084, give me a call, send me a text. I will answer any question you got. I will go through the budget with you by hand. I will go through any decision we voted on. I stand by my votes. Even if we can do things better, and I think we can, and we make efficiencies every single year to make the budget work, if you're not willing to educate yourself and learn, and if you are educated and you know something and you're not willing to share that, then you're not really part of the solution.
Supervisor Brandon, we've run out of time. Thanks for coming on Motherload Views.
BJ, thank you.
Again, we thank Supervisor Jaron Brandon, who represents District 5. We'll see you back next week for more Motherload Views.
You've been listening to Motherload Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherload. Motherload Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.